Greetings.
Is having some technical difficulties.
That's usually my game.
Yeah, my mouse click stopped working.
Is it a wireless?
Yeah, but I had another mouse and then that one wasn't clicking and then the touchpad wasn't clicking.
Jeez. Yeah, I actually would have. Because I last couple times I had trouble getting Skype working, and I actually remembered that this morning. So around 10 o'clock, I started fiddling with it, and it's a good thing I did because I ended up having to redownload it, and then it updated it that way. But prior to that, it kept locking up when I opened it and not responding. So.
What OS are you running?
Windows 10.
I'm still running an old Skype recorder. I mean, Skype.
Yeah, I kind of wish I did the same thing, but.
I have to because my recorder won't work with any of the new ones.
Yeah, I think that's what happened to me.
But I'm back and running. I thought I had to reboot, but I didn't. Just had to close everything.
Well, that's good. So this is episode 71 of RetroCast, I think.
Yeah, and I'm eating some sweet and sour Skittles this early morning.
Oh, that's quite a breakfast.
Yeah, nice and healthy.
Oh,
But I am drinking water.
well, that balances things out then.
Yeah.
I wonder how long I'll keep track of the episode number. I usually have no idea, but for lately I've been keeping track, so we'll see how long that lasts.
71, right? I won't remember. They all blur. I know we're getting close to 300 on DC Noise. I think we're like three away, and I don't know.
That's pretty crazy. I don't remember when you guys hit 200.
Yeah. And we're going at a snail's pace.
Yeah. That slowed down.
Yeah.
Lately not too bad though, it seems. I don't know.
Yeah, but we threw in a like non-Keith episode too. So,
That's right, yeah.
yeah. He's harder to get a hold of than Daryl or me.
Behind the scenes of Gotham by
But
Geeks.
Daryl's in Boston.
That's right.
Yeah. So, what's going on? You got some back issues.
Yeah, I did a little cheap bin shopping yesterday, some 50-cent comics. It was weird, actually. The place that Rob talked about when he was on, it started out, it's mostly a card shop.
Like a baseball card?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have one of those places here.
And they've been around for a long time. Actually, they go to cons now and a lot of different places. So they got into the comic books and they're more into the higher end and that sort of thing. Dave and Adams. I
Yeah.
remember they had a booth at Baltimore. But here in there they have a really huge store, and one of they do get new comics there, and they have some older more expensive books and stuff, but they do always have tons of 50-cent comics. And I went over a couple weeks ago for the first time in a while, and it just so happened when I was there that they started putting out new long boxes, and they came out from the back on pa on these with the pallet, and they had already gone through them for like real expensive stuff.
Yeah.
Mabel's given some input on the story.
I'm convinced that they know, like, what do you call it? What is that called when you did it, did it, did like the telegraph stuff?
Oh, like Morse code?
Morse code, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm convinced that the dogs know that, and that's how they're trying to communicate with us.
Yeah.
That was like, get up, daddy, and play with me. Or give
She's
me some
like,
food to quiet me down.
you're talking, so that must mean you want to play.
Yeah.
She associate like when we get even when we're on the phone or something like that, she associates it with some reason. Even if she's just laying there, like when we before we started the call, she was just laying next to me like half asleep, and then I started talking, and so that's her cue to go find a toy and bring it back to me. This one's funny because it has two squeakers. So she'll come up to me and she'll have one of the squeakers in her mouth and I'll be making noise with it. But I'll grab the other part of the toy and start squeaking that. And so then she tries to get that part of the toy. So I switch to the other squeaker. And it just goes back and forth because she wants to be the one that's in control of whatever part's squeaking.
Right.
But anyways, so long story short, for some reason, I don't know if they had sixth sense or something, but two guys that one for sure I know sells comics because I've seen him at small shows and stuff. He came in and was just like, as soon as they put one out, he would go through it and just he was taking
Annihilate it, yeah.
piles and piles of stuff. Like he
Because he's probably a seller. I mean,
Oh, he definitely is. I know he.
those guys raid the hell out of those things. Because you got those guys that you get go are probably just high-end sellers. They don't want to deal with all this other stuff. And this guy's probably a speculator, and he like knows, oh, that's the first appearance of the Spider in the Batman, so I'm gonna grab that.
Yeah. I mean, it's they don't have any policy against
Yeah.
dealers or whatever, so it's he wasn't doing anything wrong. And I didn't really care, like for the most part, because I either didn't see what he was taking or he was taking stuff that I wouldn't have wanted anyways. But
Right,
I
'cause you're pretty focused.
yeah. But I did see him like take almost a long box full of like stuff that I would have wanted from like DC Bronze Age and stuff, and I was like, oh man. But the other guy was there was cool because he was mostly like a Marvel, he more Marvel guy.
Yeah.
So we were actually like, I was standing near him, and he was actually pulling DC stuff out and showing it to me if and seeing if I wanted
Yeah,
it.
that's cool when you get the people that'll help you out. What are you looking for? I'm looking through this box. If you see this,
Right. Yeah. So him and I
especially
were
when you're
kind
looking for different
of.
things, like.
Yeah. But so anyways, I went back yesterday. That was a little while ago. I still got a lot of cool stuff that time, and I went back yesterday and got some other stuff, about 40 comics, mostly like 80s stuff with some older stuff mixed in. I got a few Batman, a few Detective, and those never last long. Like I was talking to Rob about it, and Batman and Superman, or Batman and Spider-Man, those are like the two heroes you never see
Yeah.
in quarter bins or 50-cent bins. If they are in there, they don't last long.
No, they don't.
And
That's because those books you could sell, like for
yeah.
co cover or higher. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not gonna have to like say, "Well, I can't get rid of this." You'll get rid of those.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, 'cause I have a lot of the Batman Detective I have is like post-crisis but pre Nightfall.
Yeah.
I kind of like that period on both the books. And I don't really have much Superman, but I picked up a few issues of Adventures of Superman and Superman from right post-crisis, because I would like to read those at some point, at least for the first few years of post-crisis. I have read Man of Steel and a little bit of Action Comics, the
Yeah.
Byrne stuff, but I really like Jerry Ordway, so I'd like
Yeah,
to.
Adventures of Superman.
Yeah, I like his art a lot, so.
He wrote and drew it. He's
Yeah.
like a John Byrne guy. Those guys are awesome 'cause they know what they want to do. I mean, when you can do both, you're in the best shape, right?
Yeah.
Because you when you put a word on the page, you know exactly what the picture is. You don't
Right.
have to have an artist try to figure out what you're trying to say or to capture the emotion or the movement.
Yeah, it's only one brain.
Yeah. That Superman to me during the same time Batman, like when they were doing all the tie-ins and stuff were the best. I mean, 'cause you'd always have something on the shelf and well, everything matters, but they all mattered in like a continuity sense. Do you know what I mean? Like they all related to one another.
Yeah, it
You had
was.
all the references and everything. They weren't doing their own thing, that's for sure. It was tight editorial movement on the books.
Right, it
But
was.
it seems seamless. Like sometimes it seems like editorial's binding people, at least from a reader perspective, but from this perspective, there's a lot of creativity and craziness. Like they were willing to take chances, and usually what they were doing was doing well.
Yeah, I think that kind of approach can work if everybody's on the same page, everybody wants to participate and is cool with collaborating, you know.
Plus, Byrne brought over a lot of Marvel people.
Yeah, he was pretty heavily involved at that point, changing things up. Mabel switched to a toy that used to have a squeaker, but she tore it out the
Oh
other
yeah.
day.
So I'll be quiet.
Yeah, it's a mallard, like one of those green ducks with green heads. And yeah, the other day, it's been around for a while. And the other day, she managed to tear its butt open, basically. Started pulling the stuffing out. But man, that will really occupy her almost more than anything else if she starts trying to get a toy open.
Yeah, to gut it.
Yeah, she'll sit there forever just tearing away at it.
Harley loses interest once she tears it open. Once the squeaker's gone, she loses
Yeah,
interest in it.
she's like, that one's dead. I'll find something else to kill. So, yeah, it's couldn't wait to for the con. I had to go do some comic shopping.
Yeah.
Not that I do well, at least Baltimore. Not that I really did much comic shopping. I think I bought one like back issue.
Yeah.
But
I had an opportunity to buy the first Deadpool for really cheap because of my discount. But I'm like, why would I do that if I don't like the character? And it's not like I want to turn it around and sell it.
Yeah, that
But
would be the other
it's the
reason.
only New Mutants I'm missing. But I don't know. I'll probably regret it at some point, but I don't right now. I did buy Avengers number 16 because I'm going into the Marvel realm thing again. Like, I'm going down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, I saw that. That looks like a nice copy.
Yeah, I got that. And plus, I got the Avengers. Let me see here. Number 9, which is the first appearance of Wonder Man.
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah, I've read that one, I think.
So those are the two big Avengers books I got. And then I picked up some miscellaneous Batman miniseries that I'm missing, and Dr. Spectre from Gold Key. going down other rabbit holes. But I have like emptied out all his Detective and Batman on that. You know, like I bought everything that he has that I need that are on the main two titles.
Yeah. Yeah, because those are. Well, I wouldn't say that's really like been a rabbit hole for you recently. That's pretty something you've been pretty consistently working at.
Yeah,
Those
yeah.
two.
I have a pretty good, decent run of those two. I was working on that in Green Lantern. Green Lantern, I got really far. I'm like in the double digits, like in the tens. And I'm only missing like 1 through 10, and then some sporadic ones, like in the 20s.
Yeah, I haven't. Mostly, I've just been occasionally buying random cheap stuff.
Yeah.
But I would like to get some more Wonder Woman.
Get the Rucka stuff. It's really good.
Yeah, I did read some of that back when it was coming out. I don't know if I read that digital or if I just.
I could
I can't
see,
remember,
like,
but.
I don't know if you read the. Did you read the new Wonder Woman yet?
I have other than DC Universe Rebirth number one. That's the only thing I read because I got it digitally, so I didn't want to wait. But everything else, I'm trying to wait
Oh, you're
on.
still waiting for your monthly box.
Yeah,
Okay.
it's tough. Most months I don't mind being behind, but this month has definitely been tough.
I think it rewards the problem with the Wonder Woman book, and I could see it just by seeing what other people are giving it, is a lot of people drop in and out of Wonder Woman, right? I mean, they don't stick with it, so they don't know everything that's transpired. So it's kind of like if Rucka's tapping into pre-Flashpoint plus everything that happened in the 52, and nobody was following it to begin with, and it's tapping into history, and people are just trying the book, it's kind of jarring. Because they don't
Interesting.
know that, you know what I mean? But for somebody that has been there, like I never stop Wonder Woman. I mean,
Yeah.
you know how much I love Wonder Woman. I'm trying to get Daryl to get me that San Diego invisible jet with Wonder Woman in it. But for the people that have read that stuff, they will, I think, like it. I'd be shocked if they didn't.
Hopefully you can make it.
The art is beautiful. Like you can't argue with that. I mean, it's
Yeah.
just amazing. But
Yeah, I mean, hopefully you'll make
it
it
was
more accessible.
my favorite. But I mean, just to talk a little bit about those books without spoiling anything, it's interesting their approach, but I like their approach because as much as I like Convergence, it was like regurgitating the dome every issue over. You know what I mean? It was the first issues were like ingrained and repetitive
Yeah.
over and over again. And in the Rebirth, it seems like they're doing a lot of diversity. It's like all over the board. Some are directly tapped. Some are tapping into Rebirth. Some are continuing. Some are pulling on the past. It's kind of like it's really cool.
Yeah, that's probably good,
Yeah.
especially for people that are going to try out a lot of them. Probably it'll be better for people than to have it be repetitive or a lot of the same thing
Yeah.
over and over again. But yeah, I don't think I read all of Rucka's Wonder Woman, like the original run, but I know I read some of it.
It's it, it is it could be my favorite. I mean, the George Perez stuff is amazing, but some of the concepts and stuff that Rucka introduced, plus he writes women like really well. Like, I'm not a woman, but I think he, I don't think he would represent a woman that hated Rucka. I really have, because he writes, even his independent work has strong female characters.
Yeah, my wife likes his writing. She's been reading the Lazarus Trades, and she read his Batwoman,
Yeah.
and yeah, she likes his stuff.
He's really good.
Yeah, I definitely a favorite. So,
Maybe
yeah, I would
he'll come
like.
out with a trade soon.
Yeah,
Like
that
the
seems
Rucka.
like
I
that
know
would be smart.
I know they just came out with the Wonder Woman Diodato release where they introduced Artemis and stuff. He's mostly known for his art than he is the storytelling, but it wasn't bad stuff. It was good.
Yeah, it makes sense for them to re-release those Rutka ones. I would be surprised if they don't. You know. But yeah, I wouldn't mind. I have some of, like, starting with the Rutka stuff. I mean, starting with the George Perez stuff. I have a starting with number one, I have a bunch of them going for. I think I probably have all the Perez stuff and then some more past that, but I kind of working on that volume a little bit.
Cool. And then you got the
So.
Phil Jimenez, you have the John Byrne run on that. I mean, there's a lot of big creators that have been on Wonder Woman. I like the Azzarello stuff.
Yeah, it seems like there's a bunch of
Some people
good
hate it,
runs
but
on there. Oh, yeah, the new 52, you mean? Yeah.
yeah. Well, her history, even in the George Perez run, has been really deep in Greek mythology. Like, even
Yeah.
her villains or where the story takes place or stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Paris
So
stuff has a
if
lot
you
of.
don't like that god stuff, you could turn you off, but that it's some focus of her character a lot. Well, they turned her into the god of war in the Azzarello run, so it for Ares, which was one of her major threats.
Right. Yeah, it's an interesting approach.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean there's a lot of stories in that Perez did that are just totally in that realm, like in on Paradise Island or just directly having to do with the gods, you know. So there's a lot of the mythology in there. I mean, I don't know if I probably wouldn't be my favorite. The Azzarello stuff probably wouldn't be my favorite origin for her, but I really like Cliff Chang's art.
Oh
And I
yeah.
thought that the design that I liked the weird designs that he had for the gods and
Yeah, Poseidon and all that stuff.
Yeah,
It was
pretty.
definitely a different take. The one kid with all the candles on his head, or was it a different character? I can't remember. But they were different, like non-traditional looks for the gods.
Yeah, I think that was a good approach, good idea for to sort of update it or make it more modern, you know. So that was pretty cool.
Right on. Well, do you want me to start off?
Sure.
All right. I read this as a kid. When, matter of fact, I'm going to pull it out of the bag now because it's in pretty good shape. I didn't beat this one to hell like the Superman versus Flash. So it was probably not like my favorite story when I was a kid. But it was the Whitman version of Superman versus Muhammad Ali, and I read
Nice.
this because of the everything that's transpired recently. He's passed away. They had his memorial. It's really cool. He invited other people that weren't celebrities to his memorial, that were just fans. But they ended up selling his stuff on eBay, their passes. But I don't know. But it was a. Back then, it was like, how is this even going to happen? But they were doing a lot of like treasury-sized editions of characters, and they were crossing over to the Marvel Universe. They had, Superman versus Spider-Man. They had Batman versus the Hulk. They had Superman versus Flash and Superman versus Wonder Woman and then Superman versus Muhammad Ali. So they were like big in-your-face action. This has a great cover. There's a lot of celebrities in here. Like you'll see like the Horse Shack and Welcome Back Carter. You'll see like Stan Lee. You'll see L Lucy. It's got a map in the inside cover that tells you what all the celebrities are. A matter of fact, in position 107, I'm trying to find him, is one of your favorites. It's Wally West. So
Oh, nice.
he is on the cover of this. I'm trying to find 107 now and I can't find it. You think they'd be close to each other, but I see 108. I don't see 107. But he's in there somewhere. Alfred is in there. So some are like, they have pictures of Julius Schwartz. So they have Denny O'Neil. So they have a lot of comic people, a lot of regular celebrities. I hear they edited some celebrities out because they didn't have the rights to do it. But,
Yeah, I remember hearing that. Or I think there was an article in Back Issue magazine about that cover a while back. I remember reading.
They have the Titans in here pretty much. I'm still gonna have to find out where Wally is, but I can't see 107. That's weird. You think it would be near 108 and 109, but it's not. Huh. Oh, I see it now. 107 is right by Muhammad Ali's thigh. 107. That doesn't look like him at all. That's interesting. All right. Well, so much for that. It's got in the inside cover, it's got that map. So like it has a colorless ID with numbers of the characters, and then you can go look up that character and you'll see who it is. Like 130 is Don King. 132 is Barbara Gordon. Larry Hama's even in this. 138. What was Larry
Nice.
Hama doing at this time? This was from the 70s. But it's got the creators are Neil Adams and Denny O'Neil. And the whole concept is this alien race comes down to Earth as well, it starts off with the reporters Clark, Lois, and Jimmy who are working for WGBS. This time they're on the TV side. And they're going downtown into the slums to try to film. They got word that Muhammad Ali was playing with the kids down there and they wanted to get some footage of him. And he is playing basketball with the kids. And one of the kids says, "You shoot baskets as good as you punch, champ." And he says, "Nah, in the ring, I'm the greatest. In the schoolyard, I'm merely terrific." But Lois gets an interview with him, and then this alien appears, and he says, "We consider Earth a threat to our culture and our people. And the only way we could we're going to attack your Earth, but you could defend it if we put a ring together and you fight us." And then they get into a weird skirmish where Muhammad Ali and Superman are like, "Well, maybe I should defend us instead of Muhammad Ali is I'm the best, I'm the greatest, and Superman, but I have all these powers." And they said, "Well, if you're going to be the champion of Earth, you're going to have to fight underneath a red sun because you're not on Krypton. You wouldn't have these powers. If you're going to be a Kryptonian, you're going to fight like a Kryptonian under your own sun. So you're not going to be able to fly. You're not going to have all these superpowers." And they have the skirmish, so they have to fight each other to determine who's going to fight their champion. And they said they have like a month to train, and Muhammad Ali wants to train Superman, but month isn't enough. So they go into this time paradox in the Fortress of Solitude that allow time to go by slower, and Muhammad Ali actually trains him in that that a ring in time, but the aliens know that they're cheating time, so they count all that time against them, and they say your time is up. But it's pretty cool because there's one scene where he's like, Muhammad Ali's training Superman about the jab, and then he's like, the hook is like this, and then he says like the uppercut. So I remember all these because as a kid, when I was like 6 and 7 and 8, I used to box with my neighborhood friend because he had boxing gloves, and I didn't like to box. I'm a lover, I'm not a fighter. I never liked to box, but that was one of the things he liked to do, so I would box with him and he'd beat the living shit out of me. And it was pretty violent. We'd get bloody noses and black eyes and stuff. But there was this one time, and it was pretty cool because after that he stopped wanting to box, which was good for me. But he was beating the crap out of me like usual, and I had the gloves like in front of my face so I wouldn't get clobbered. And I just like I gave him the nastiest uppercut, man. I just swung with all my might and I knocked him on his ass and gave him a bloody nose. And ever since he did that, he never wanted to box again, which is good because he would have beat the crap out of me the next time. He knew how to box. I didn't know how to box. I was just there. I was just a target. But Muhammad Ali says an uppercut is a clean statement, comes out of nowhere, and when it connects, the statement ends in an exclamation point.
Nice.
So true. But Neil Adams does a really good rendition of Muhammad Ali when he's training Superman. And a matter of fact, the only DC character that they even show in here in the comic itself is just one panel with Adam Strange and his woman. Is there a woman named Alana? I can't remember.
I think
But
that sounds right.
it's just those two. And the rest, like, you don't see Batman or anybody else in here. So they get in the ring with this character and they decide Muhammad Ali and Superman fight. Superman gets a crap beat out of him, but it's almost like they had a plan that he would get the crap beat out of him so he could go back down to the ship in a hospital unit, and then he mimics some other characters. He uses like holographic images to make it look like it's not him, and then he invades the ship and then gets the ships to turn around away from the red sun. So that was pretty cool. Meanwhile, Muhammad Ali is getting the crap beat out of him by this huge alien that's like 10 times his size. And it looks like he's gonna. And I guess what Muhammad Ali used to do, like I remember him as a kid. Because my parents would watch the fights, my uncles and my mom and dad and everybody would get around to watch the fights, and I really didn't care about boxing too much. But I remember all the talk he used to do. He was a very confident man. He liked to get into people's heads, and I guess one of the things he used to do is predict the round that he would knock his opponent out. And in this one, he predicted, round 4 is when I'll knock this guy out. And it didn't look good until the one alien says, "Even if you win or lose, you are I'm gonna still destroy Earth." And then he just started beating the crap out of this alien, like Muhammad Ali. Just even though the other guy's hits were so much more devastating, he just like started pounding the heck out of his midsection until he couldn't stand anymore and took over. Superman got a hold of the Armada and pretended he was the lead alien and said, "I need you to turn the ships around." They turn around, and then he gets his powers back, and then he fights all the ships. There's like one scene where he's actually like flying through all the engine rooms of every ship because they line up to attack Superman, and he like flies through the engine cores of all of them, knocks out all the ships at one time, which is kind of cool. And Muhammad Ali actually knocks this alien out of the ring and wins, but it doesn't mean that they really win. He's still gonna launch the strike against Earth, and then that one alien that lost, he's kind of like Apollo Creed, I guess. He kind of's like, no, he legitimately won. You're not gonna change what you promised them. We're an alien species of our word, and you're lying to them. They're no threat to us. They're being honest. You're being dishonest. So they basically imprison the one lead alien, and they let Earth be free. And it ends with like Superman, we are the greatest, Muhammad Ali says. So it's a pretty good story. Really good art. My favorite scene in there is when he's training Superman, and then there's one scene in there where it's just a Muhammad Ali scene, and it's a really good panel.
Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, I've known of that comic and about it and stuff, but I've never really heard the plot. It does sound like a fun story that they did a pretty good job of making an entertaining story. It gave Superman stuff, cool stuff to do too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been a big boxing person either. And I actually did when I was a kid too. I think I was in middle school maybe or something. There was a trend where guys in the neighborhood were boxing each other, and I tried it once and I totally hated it. Probably because I got beat pretty bad,
Yeah, so did I.
but I
And it
just
what
got like really angry. Like it made me I couldn't separate it. But I was getting really pissed because
Yeah.
it hurt.
Well, it hurt, and it's not fun when you're getting the crap beat out of you.
No.
I mean, you gotta know, I have a big nose. I'm not gonna lie to you. It's probably an easy target. But every time I boxed, and if I got hit in the nose like a direct shot, it was like I was down.
Yeah.
And
Yeah,
the only
it
time I
hurts.
won was when I was protecting my nose, and I just did a surprise uppercut into his face.
That's your weak spot. Gotta protect
Yeah,
that
protect my nose.
spot. That's where your power is concentrated, in your nose, like Samson's hair. All right, well, the stuff that I'm gonna talk about today, these I did not yesterday, but the previous time I got these for 50 cents each. The first one was one of those ones that you never heard, or I had never heard of. But it's 50 cents and it looks interesting, so why not? I thought it might be an interesting book to talk about on the show. It's an epic graphic novel called Seven Block. It's written by George, or written by Chuck Dixon, so that was the name that I recognized. And then the artist is Jorge Zaffino, who I hadn't heard of. But this came out in 1990, and it's a pretty interesting story. It's when it starts off, it's a little because the art is he uses a lot of shadow. It's pretty dark most of the time.
Yeah.
And the settings are there's a lot of like it takes place mostly at night or in this prison, and so there's a lot of darkness and stuff. But and so I kind of had to use in the beginning it introduced the two main characters, a guy and a girl, and so for those few pages I kind of had to at times use the dialogue to make sure I was following who was who. Mostly for the woman, because first you see her, she's in the first scene you see her, she's a prostitute. And excuse me. But and then next time you see her, she's talking to a detective or something like that, and so she's dressed really differently, and it took me a second to make sure I was read about the same character. But basically, this woman and this guy both separately end up in prison. She because she picks up a guy, and she's got this van, where she does her work, and a guy that works with her that's that drives the van, just kind of like, apparently he just drives around the park.
Is he a pimp or no?
I don't know. It's hard to tell, like, if he's their pimp or if like they just work together or something.
Yeah.
Might be your pimp. But the guy that they pick up, the John, he starts attacking her. And so the guy driving the van's like, "Hey, cut it out!" And the guy attacks the driver. So she comes up from behind. He left her alone, so she comes up from behind and stabs him in the back. But then the van crashes, and so basically, like, she cuts a deal so that they don't if she cuts the deal, they'll put the murder on her boyfriend. I guess that's what the cop at least is calling the guy that was driving. Then the other guy is this guy named Tanner, and he messes up on parole. So both of them end up in prison, and things don't really go well for them in prison. The guy Tanner, he pisses off like this Aryan Nazi group within the prison, and then things fall through for the woman and the deal that she was supposed to be putting together. So both of them volunteer for this experiment on 7 Block, where they so that they can get out of general population and be protected. But of course things don't go real well. Like, when they get there's only one occupied cell, and it's this guy called Dwayne. And they say, "Oh, don't worry about him," or whatever, but they hear weird noises coming out of the cell and stuff. And so yeah, things they basically start doing experiments on the two, the man and the woman. And it's not, at first they kind of lie to him about whether they're going to be doing any surgery on them. It's like, don't cut me open stuff, but things don't go well, and they kind of get powers or abilities and sensitivity to light and stuff. And so then the last part of the book is kind of like when the shit hits the fan, it all go crazy. It's about 40, 46 pages, I think. No ads. So it's a kind of a neat little horror story. It didn't blow me away, but it was a pretty fun read. Didn't really take too long to read either.
Looks like IDW re-released it in
Oh, did they?
let's see what year this was. It says it's the second series, but it looks like it's the same story.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the way that the ending is, you could continue it. It's possible, but yeah, it's pretty cool.
And then the Epic re-released it in 2004, a second print. Wonder if you have the first or the second print.
First, it says
Ah.
first printing 1990.
There you go.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Sometimes it's just fun to pick something up you don't know anything about, you know?
I never heard of it.
Yeah.
I never read a lot of Epic. I think maybe I'm aware of like one or two things.
Yeah. Yeah, me neither, but yeah, sometimes it's fun to discover something that you never even heard of when you're looking through those bins and just say, "Yeah, 50 cents, I'll just try this, see how it is."
Yeah.
So
So my next one is Avengers number 16, which has like
nice.
this glorious cover. Like it's one of my favorite covers. It has Cap on the front, And then on one side of the wall, he's in front of a wall with his shield, and he's saying, "Avengers Assemble." It says, "A spectacular issue, the start of a great new Avengers lineup." And it has a bunch of Avengers on the wall, but it also has the Masters of Evil, which are the Executioner, Melter, Enchantress, and the Black Knight. And as you open up, they're in a fight. This is by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And Jack Kirby did the layouts. It says the inks were by Dick Ayers. And this is an interesting comment at the very opening page. It says, "Possibly the most memorable illustrated story you will read this year." I don't know why they say that, but
The
the art is
typical
nice.
the typical Marvel hyperbole of the
And
time.
Stan Lee doesn't mess around. He's like, "Just this once, let's start without an introduction. If you remember our last issue, you'll know what's going on. If not, don't be bashful, turn the page."
Nice.
So he's like, he's not gonna get you involved in the story, but they're fighting, and what Thor's hammer has the ability to do is do dimensional portals when he swings it, and he transports the Black Knight and the Melter into another dimension where they are defeated by the Avengers, which at that time was Thor, Wasp, Giant Man, and Iron Man. So it's four against two. The Enchantress and the Executioner, they knew beforehand when Thor swung his hammer that they needed to get away or they'd be transported. So they're still undiscovered. Meanwhile, Steve Rogers is on an island, and he just fought in a battle against Baron Zemo, and he killed him. So Baron Zemo is believed to be dead, and they're just tr him and what is that guy's name? Rick Jones. Rick Jones is kind of like that Snapper Carr of the DC Universe.
Yeah.
He's always around. He's involved with Captain Marvel. Rick Jones is involved with the Hulk. He's involved with Captain America and the Avengers. He's like that sidekick guy. And Rick Jones did eventually become Atom Bomb, didn't he? In the new Marvel? I think he did. He got radiated and became Atom Bomb.
Yeah, I know he did some stuff, like they did a lot of stuff with
And I
them.
think he did stuff with the Marvel stuff too, but I'm not very well versed in it. I'm aware of it. And the Avengers come back tired after they turn over, the Black Knight and the Melter, which is I mean, the Black Knight I could see being with like the Enchantress and the Electrocutioner, but the Melter seems like an odd choice because the other people are they're kind of like mystical and historical. Like the Black Knight is from a different time, King Arthur times and stuff like that. And the other two, they're from Asgard, so they have the link to Thor. But then you got the Melter. Although he was zapping all kinds of they were using cool things because like we're gonna defeat the Avengers because the Avengers are trying to protect the people at the same time that we're fighting, which you always see that like in the Superman movies and stuff, is that's the hero's weakness is they care about the citizens, whereas the villains they don't care. And then they were like, "We're gonna defeat you because we're just gonna kill all the people around you and you're gonna just have to give up and surrender." And that's why Thor said, "Well, we got another opportunity. We're just gonna take you to another dimension and kick your ass." But Iron Man, Wasp, and Giant Man, they come back and they're just exhausted. And they're like, "Man, we need a vacation. We need to take a break. We should start to disband the Avengers or look for replacements because this is taking a toll on us." Just coincidentally, Hawkeye invades the mansion, ties up Jarvis, and says, "I want to join the Avengers. I'm not your enemy. I just want to prove my worth." And then it says, "See Iron Man number 57, where he was kind of framed for being a villain when he really wasn't." And it talks about in that issue or an issue afterwards. I own both issues, the first appearance of Hawkeye and the first appearance of Black Widow. I don't remember if they're the same issue or not, but he talks about his love for Natasha and how he tried to save her, but she ended up near death, and he doesn't know what her status is because the Russians saw her betray their country and almost killed her. He took her to the hospital, and then you don't know what her status is, but he's like, I want to be a hero. I want to join the Avengers. Oh, no, I don't like this one bit. Ah!
It fits right there.
What?
Barb's trying to reclaim her table, and she's moving shit around like the comics that she has no business moving around.
Uh-oh.
You just distracted me.
Did she mess up your piles?
She did. I didn't like what was going on at all. Plus, she's like, has this huge cup of coffee waiting to spill on my comics. Like, I don't like it at all. Even a slurp could go on them. This is bad. She knows she does it on purpose.
It's going on a. So you had to go on a rescue mission?
I had to rescue. So poor Jarvis, he's like, let me show you my talents. He gets three arrows out, and with those three arrows he unties Jarvis, because Jarvis has something around his mouth, so he couldn't speak. Mm-hmm. He's got his hands tied behind his back, and he's got his legs tied at the bottom, and he shoots these three arrows and frees him, and they're like, wow, that was impressive. But you had tied up our butler. So they say, okay, we got one member. We don't even know the status of Thor. Thor went back to Asgard. Captain America is MIA. We don't even know where he is. And they're using they're empowered to make this decision, because the core members are those three plus Thor, and Thor's off, and he's off on a mission. They don't know when he's gonna come back. So they say, man, we really need some strength. Like, what if we lose Thor? We need some power, so let's go recruit. This is really the only people that they go recruit. They go to Submariner, and then Submariner basically gives them the big finger. He's like, screw you. You don't care about Atlantis or my people. You just care about the land. And he says, thank you for the offer, but that ain't going to work out. And then the scene cuts to Scarlet Witch and her brother, Pietro. And they're talking about their background and their relationship to the evil mutants with their father, Magneto. And they want to apply for the Avengers membership. So the next day, they announce a new member, Hawkeye, and the press is like, all right. They're excited to get a new member, but what they don't know is that the original members are going to leave. And Cap gets eventually a long journey home. They get back, and Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver demonstrate their capabilities, and they're welcome to be with the Avengers. They tell Cap what's going on. He tells them about the adventure with Baron Zemo, and they say, yeah, we're just going to go on sabbatical. We need to go away. And they go off on their way, and then they announce to the public the new Avengers, which is really Cap, Scarlet Witch, Quicksilver, and Hawkeye, which at that time you're probably like, what? That's a weird lineup. You got two Avengers that don't have any powers. Well, Steve has some super soldier serum, but he's not known for like having this incredible strength. He's pretty much known for his leadership and his abilities, like physical abilities. And then you have Scarlet Witch, who is really powerful, but at this time she's really powerful if you look at her now.
Yeah.
And then Quicksilver, it's like kind of like the Flash, but for some reason, Iron Man says, you really are missing strength. You really need to go recruit somebody. How about the Hulk? So it says next issue, they're going to go after the Hulk. And I like want to read that issue so bad, because how do you even like keep the Hulk under control? Like, he's just At this time, he's not controllable at all.
Yeah.
And the only time he was controllable in the Defenders is when they had the pretty girls around to like keep him calm. Even in the movies, they have Black Widow do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, and they already kind of tried that earlier on. They should know that the Hulk is trouble.
Yeah, and at this time, their checklist of comics wasn't that much. They had Fantastic Four number 39 out. They had Spider-Man number 25. They had X-Men number 11, Thor 116, Strange Tales 155, Suspense was 66, Tales to Astonish was 68, and Sergeant Fury. So this was the time period where they were kind of limited to what they could publish, and they were shoving like dual heroes in Tales, Strange Tales, Tales of Suspense, and Tales to Astonish. And
yeah, you had like Iron Man, Cap, Doctor Strange,
Torch
Human
and
Torch,
Thing.
Yeah, Thing.
And then Ant-Man was in Tales to Astonish with the Hulk. So a lot of the characters that were in the Avengers had their own books and other books, but as like side stories, like they'd have two stories per book.
Yeah. Yeah, and Thor just had kept the numbering of Journey into Mystery. But
this
yeah.
was a really good comic, man. I don't often get like that. I've been on a Cap kick really lately, so I wanted to read it, but man, it was really good. I was really stoked. I really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it really was, at the time, a pretty big change. pretty crazy change. It really shook it up. Different member, with the change of members. That's pretty cool. All right, so this is another longer comic. This is an Elseworlds. It's Cowboy Batman. Batman,
nice.
The Blue, the Gray, and the Bat. This was written by Elliot S. Mangan. And although he doesn't have his typical exclamation point after the S, they must not have let him. So it was written by Elliot S. Mangan and Alan Weiss, where Mangan did the script. And then the pencils are by Alan Weiss with inks by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez. This came out in 1992. So yeah, Cowboy Batman, I mean, it kind of sums it up. It takes
that
place...
B right by Harley. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
Holy crap. It's like right in her nose.
Whoa. Big one.
Yeah, it's probably one of those wasps. We have like wasp nests near in our house, and this one doesn't want to leave Harley alone, and she doesn't give a shit. I hate wasps. They just bug me.
Well, yeah, wasps are jerks.
Yeah.
They don't really do anything good like bees.
Sorry to interrupt, but it was like right on her nose. I was like,
that's
damn.
Okay. But, yeah. This takes place during the Civil War and starts out with Abraham Lincoln. And he asks Batman, or Lieutenant Colonel Bruce Wayne of the 13th Massachusetts Cavalry, and who has come up with this identity of Batman. He basically wants him to go out to Nevada and secure the mine that they discovered there. And it's a huge source of gold and silver, and they don't want it to fall into Confederate hands. But for some reason, there's some rebels out there or something. But basically, they, for some reason, the metals from the mine aren't going to the Union or the Confederacy. So he's going out there to find out what's going on and solve it. And he can only, he doesn't have the men to send out there. So he's sending Bruce Wayne because he can accomplish a lot on his own with just like a few assistants. So yeah, so he heads out. He does like the Bruce Wayne thing. He pretends to be, he calls it a fop, you know, the sort of Playboy kind of deal, but just the Civil War era version of it, the 19th century version of it. And he's referring to an Agent R that he's going to meet, just the letter R, which is a significant letter if you know Batman. So he heads out on the stagecoach, and there's two women, an old lady and a young blonde woman, that are in the stagecoach with him and Alfred. As they get closer, there's we see Agent R, and so it's basically like meant to be a version of Robin. He's half Native American, catches up to them on a horse, and he's got Batman's horse with them. It's a black horse called Apocalypse. So yeah, they eventually make it to this town. Batman's keeping his identity a secret. They get set upon on the way there by some bandits, and he takes care of them as Batman and like protects his identity as Bruce Wayne by going out to help and pretending to pretending to get knocked off the carriage. But once they get to this to the town in Nevada, he meets Mark Twain. At this point, just he's Samuel Clemens. And then he also meets Wild Bill. I had actually Wild Bill is actually his contact there that he's supposed to meet, Agent H, because Wild Bill's real name is James Butler Hickok, which I actually didn't recognize that when I first saw it. But so I looked him up because I thought he was a historical character, and but if I had kept reading, they do like start referring to him as Wild Bill, and he's not really crazy about the nickname at first, but then he comes around to it. So basically, once they're in the town, they start doing their investigation, and he ends up working with Wild Bill, and Samuel Clemens ends up helping out as well. And they work on trying to figure out the mystery of what's going on with the gold and stuff. And there's a little bit of a like a twist in the ending, when it seems like everything's resolved and somehow the gold and silver is going into Mexico, and there's some involvement of the French, who are in Mexico. But like the real there's a little bit of a surprise to who the real culprit is. And the narration is throughout is kind of like a takes the form of a report that Bruce Wayne is writing back to Abraham Lincoln about the experience and about the mission. And sometimes it Mangan uses that technique where there's like a little bit of a contrast between what he's saying and in the letter and what's actually happening in the panel, but it was pretty cool. The art's nice. I found the coloring to be like a little maybe because maybe it's a combination of the coloring and the type of glossy paper that it's on. I found the coloring to be a little bit know how to describe it exactly, but it's.
Sounds like you didn't like it.
Yeah, I
I mean,
wasn't
you're
great.
not. I'm just trying to go off your tones, but.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about the coloring. Something about it might be the coloring, it might be the combination with the paper that it's on, but it just seems like a little bit almost too. It holds up really well. I mean, it was published in 1992, and it looks really still looks really deep. The colors are really deep and stuff, but something about the palette, I don't know, just I wasn't crazy about. But the story is pretty good. I mean, I'd say it's kind of an average story overall, because a lot of the appeal is just kind of what you know off the bat is just with Elseworlds in general, you know, seeing Cowboy Batman basically. You know, like I said, there's sort of a little bit of a twist to the ending, but it's not super surprising or anything like that. So I give it like a 3 out of 5 or so. You know, it was entertaining. It was a fun read if you like Elseworlds and you kind of like the setting. I don't know if you would if you weren't really into the setting of the Civil War era, like the 19th century and stuff, if the idea of Cowboy Batman in the 19th century, if that doesn't appeal, that doesn't make you interested, then you're probably not going to like it, because that's the main, like, seeing that is like the main appeal of it. I don't think it would like convince somebody that didn't care about Cowboy Batman, you know. So
I have this, but I don't remember reading it. I don't know what that says, but.
I mean, I could see that. Like, I could see if you read it a long time, I was sort of forgetting it. It's not, you know, it's not super memorable, but it's a fun read. I mean, it was entertaining.
1992.
Yep.
So I'm gonna tie in something that you mentioned into my next read, and that's Garcia Lopez. So my next pick
Nice.
is DC and Marvel Presents Batman versus the Incredible Hulk. This was originally printed as a Treasury size edition and then later reprinted in 1995 when they co-published all their team-ups like Teen Titans, X-Men, Spider-Man, Superman. They put these like gold borders on it. I don't have the Treasury size edition, but I have this gold bordered size edition. And this is by Len Wein and Jose Garcia Lopez with Dick Giordano on inks. And it says special thanks to Marv Wolfman and Mike DiCarlo. So this was a very interesting read. The art is like freaking amazing. Like I don't think I've ever seen Garcia Lopez do the Hulk. And it's freaking amazing. And he draws a hell of a Batman and Joker. Like I've seen a lot of his stuff. Garcia Lopez is kind of known for like doing all of the product line for DC for all their merchandise like in the 70s and 80s. So all these iconic images that you've seen on T-shirts or toy boxes or they were probably coming from Garcia Lopez. So he did a lot of like Batman, but seeing him on the Hulk is amazing. And this tale brings Bruce Banner. The one thing I find really interesting is that Bruce Banner always like they didn't want to like explain why the Hulk has purple pants all the time. They just made Bruce wear purple pants all the time. So he's like working at Wayne Corp, and it's like he got a job there as like he's kind of like the wandering Bruce Banner like now. Like he's wanted by the government and the military, and he's like wandering like on the run. And he gets a job. Like he's like I'm doing these menial tasks at Wayne Corp when I should be doing working on the gamma core reactor that Bruce is working on, you know, that he has all these scientists working on. But I needed to get a job and I needed to get close to the project because he's still searching for a cure so he could get rid of the Hulk. And he sees this as an opportunity. So he goes there. He's the only guy, like the only janitorial service guy with purple pants. And later on, when Bruce Wayne realizes who he is, he's like a scientist with purple pants. He's the only guy with purple pants. The purple and green go damn good together, though. Like, whoever came up with the design of the pants and the Hulk monster, they have props because the colors just, they go really well together.
Yeah, so, it's interesting because those are usually bad guy colors.
Yeah.
Purple and green, they usually use those on bad guys.
And that's like the connection to the Joker. It's got purple and green. It's a different color of purple, but that's how the Joker tries to get control. It's like, look, I got green hair like you do. You know, we could be buddies. Come on.
Purple Pants Club.
Yeah. We both look like monsters and people treat us bad. So they introduce this new villain. Well, he's like an alien, but he's almost like a god. He's called the Shaper, and he like feeds off of dreams. And there's a bunch of people in Gotham that are just freaking out, you know? Like, they're, one guy's dreaming he's like in Alaska doing some hunting, and then next thing he knows, he wakes up in his bedroom, and it's snowing in his bedroom. And then this couple is making out during a B-film, midnight movie marathon, and they wake up, and then there's all these monsters next to them. So it's like he's making their dreams become reality. And this Shaper guy is like in a weakened state. Like, he's on Earth, he's stuck on Earth, and he needs help. And the only way he seems to get help is he recruits the Joker. And the Joker's job is to break into Wayne Corps and steal the gamma reactor that he's been working on. So that's how the Hulk gets involved, is the Joker invades Wayne Corps, and then all of a sudden his coworkers are just laughing. They're like laughing, but Bruce is smart enough. He starts laughing. He grabs a protective suit because they have that in the lab, so he wouldn't start laughing. And then he dashes to hit the alarm to report, because Joker and his henchmen are trying to steal the reactor. He does set the alarm off, but they tackle him, and they're beating him to death, and then he turns into the Hulk inside a Wayne Corps, and they're like shooting at him, and Joker's goons are like, you know, there's nothing we can do to stop the Hulk, but you make us, you know, you're putting us out there to shoot the Hulk. Well, Batman arrives because the alarm went out, and then Hulk has the gamma reactor core that he has. It's like in the shape of a gun. And he's like scratching his head as he has the whole machine with him. He's like, huh, what's Hulk supposed to do with a stupid machine? And Batman's like torn between a rock and the hard place. Is like, do I go after him or do I let him destroy this machine? And he's like, well, I need that machine. I don't want him to destroy the machine. So then Joker starts with his, we could be friends. Look, I got green hair. You know, like, you could trust me. And because he's after the same gamma core that Bruce is after. And the Hulk ends up throwing it. Joker catches it and then starts to take off. And then he gets in this really cool fist fight with the Hulk. And there's one scene where the Hulk gets a hold of him, and it looks like he's going to crack his back. He's just squeezing Batman to death. And then Batman gives him like a thunder punch on the ears. He just goes, wham! And it just distracts him enough so he can get away. But he knows that if he lands a punch or something, that he's in trouble. So he uses gases in his utility belt to try to knock the Hulk out. And then the Hulk, he does knock the Hulk out, and then he reverts back to Bruce Banner. And then that's how Wayne knows he's been working for him all along. And he says, I'm going to hire you as a scientist. We need to try to rebuild this core. Joker takes the core back to the Shaper and starts hitting him with the gamma core and giving him his strength. And he finds out that gamma core is not working, that he needs something else. And he says, bring me the Dr. Banner. So Bruce is kind of like working on a new reactor core. He kind of loses his mind. Alfred's there. And he tries to calm him down as he's getting mad at his employees that are working underneath him. And what else happens here? They're on a ship. They get in a fight. This is really cool. Is the Joker and the Shaper develop this yellow monster? And I think they've done this with the Hulk before. I just can't remember what. But he's almost like a blobbish creature, and the Hulk tries to fight him, and he just gets absorbed by the creature. And the Hulk, this creature actually turns like into like a Marshmallow Man prison. So he's like a huge prison the Hulk can't break out of, and he takes him into like government hands where he thinks he's in the government hands. Well, this is where Commissioner Gordon comes in. It's pretty cool. He calls his buddy Thunderbolt Ross, and he says, "Why do you have these goons taking away, invading Wayne Corps and taking Bruce Banner?" And he says, "I don't have anybody. You got a big problem. That's not the military operation." And Gordon's, "Oh no, this is something else." And that was the Joker's goons. That's how you find out they were posing as the government to take away Bruce to try to bring him to the Shaper. And that's exactly what they do. And we do get a scene in here with Samson. Like he's there with the Thunderbolt Ross. He says, "Hey, if they need any extra muscle, send me to Gotham and I'll lend them a hand." But he never gets involved. So that was cool that they brought in Commissioner Gordon and Thunderbolt Ross. And then you have the battle scene with the Shaper, and then he realizes it's the Shaper realizes it's not Bruce Banner's mind that he needs, but it's the monster that's actually stabilizing his condition. So he's like, "Bring me the Hulk." Well, the Hulk escapes. The gas Batman's fights with the Hulk again, and this time they demolish a whole building. And Batman finds that he has to team up with the Joker to get what he needs. So he teams up with the Joker, and they bring the Hulk. And then the Shaper uses his powers to cause dreams within the Hulk and within Batman to see villains. Like they'll see like the leader and Scarecrow and Two-Face and all those different villains. And because he made the deal with the Shaper, the Joker did, he was granted like godlike abilities. So now they have to defeat a god. And then the Shaper just kind of like vanishes. He takes off, goes about his own way. So there's a huge battle between the Hulk, Batman, and the Joker with godlike powers. And I think we've seen the Joker have godlike powers before, like in the Emperor Joker, where he had the powers of a god. Well, back in the 70s, he had the powers of a god too. But he ended up losing his mind because of those powers. And he couldn't take it anymore when he had these powers. So he essentially gives them up and then goes into Arkham. And it's really weird because he's envisioning himself as a god in Arkham. He's in a straitjacket and he's just there laughing. And then Bruce is in his. Now he's not just wearing a purple pants, he's wearing a purple jacket, and he's just walking away. He's basically leaving Gotham, doing the music, do 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 do, do 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 do, and then he's done, and that's how it ends. But it's pretty cool. The one thing I posted on Facebook is it has the evolution of a cover, and the one thing I found interesting is, man, they really made Jose like have a lot of iterations of the cover. And obviously the first cover was, I agree with the editorial comments in there. He says this isn't right. The Hulk doesn't look very menacing, and we're not sure if Batman is swinging into the picture or jumping in. Also, Batman's right leg is awkward. So they made some comments on there. The second picture I think looks phenomenal, like even better than the cover that they came out with. But they say Batman is perfect. So is the rest of the cover, except the Hulk, though he looks a bit more menacing than the first rough, the foreshortening on his torso and his dainty left foot just doesn't look right. And I don't think his like dainty I think his foot looks awesome. It looks like way better than what they originally came up with. They actually ended up hiding the feet. But
Interesting.
that is my favorite rendition of the cover. And then this other one, which I don't care for, It says, great, except for the Hulk's legs. They're still clumsy. Eliminate the toes pointing out. Have both legs twist forward rather than outward and make his feet bigger. So, I mean, these editors would drive an art. Like, in today's world, do you think they would put up with shit like that? I don't think so. But
that's pretty crazy, especially with, like, Garcia Lopez. Like, everyone just think of him as, like, you don't criticize him. So that's very interesting that they included that. That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's another one that like Superman and Ali that I have seen a whole bunch of times and, you know of, but never heard what the story was about. It sounds pretty entertaining. Sounds pretty cool. The beginning kind of reminds me of the Hulk movie, how he was working in a factory doing menial tasks. They had him. I rewatched that recently.
Yeah, he was a bottler. They were working in that bottling of a Mexican or a Colombian soda company, right? Or it was Brazil.
I know it was somewhere he was speaking Spanish. I couldn't.
I think it was Brazil.
South America somewhere, yeah. But
they had some really crazy scenes, like on rooftops, where how close the buildings were together and stuff. You know, like the housing.
Right. Yeah.
Everything was just stacked.
Yeah. Yeah, that I hadn't seen that movie since it came out, which is I think was 8 years ago.
Yeah, I liked Norton as or Ed Norton as the Hulk.
Yeah, he was. I thought he made sense as Banner.
Yeah, he did.
The movie. It's okay.
I like the first part of the movie better than the second, just like the first one.
Yeah.
They did a really good job of one of my favorite Hulk arcs, which a lot of people hate, is the Mr. Blue and the Mr. Green and all that stuff that Bruce Jones did on the Hulk. Yeah. I actually liked it, like, a lot. So that movie I liked because they took off with that.
Yeah, I thought what's her name? The actress that played Betty. I thought she was good. Liv Tyler. I thought she was pretty good in it.
Yeah, she was good. But Thunderbolt Ross was good.
Yeah, he wasn't too bad.
Wasn't it God, what is that actor? The Roadhouse actor. He was Patrick Swayze's mentor. Sam Elliott. Or am I thinking of the first movie? I'm getting confused with the actors.
I think that was the first one.
Okay.
That played
Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah, it wasn't him in this one. I don't know what the actor's name is. I can picture him because I just watched it, but. William Hurt. I don't really. What's he known for?
He's been in a lot of stuff. I just can't think of anything.
Yeah. IMDb says he's known for Into the Wild, Dark City, Hulk, History of Violence. I've seen those movies. I do recognize him. He looks a lot different without the beard and stuff. He's played a lot of different types of roles, though. Anyways, my last one is a little different. This is just a normal length comic. It's Superman's Pal, Jimmy Olsen, number 93. This was probably like one of the best grabs I got out of that 50 cent bin when and I got to it before that other guy because it's actually in pretty good shape. There's a little tear at the top, but it's in pretty good shape. It's from 1966, but it's featuring Jimmy Olsen as the Batman Superman of Earth X, and he's got a costume that combines Superman. It's like Superman costume, but with Batman's cowl, cape, and gloves. And he's punching a dude on like a floating platform with a gun. Looks like futuristic and stuff, but this actually has two stories in it. The first one is the cover story, Batman Superman of Earth X. And so it's funny how fast this gets moving. Like, back in the day they didn't waste any time. And
And they can complete a story.
yeah. Yeah, but it's like in one page he goes to see Professor Potter atop Mount Tipton, and Potter shows him this dimension travel machine that he has invented, and he tells Jimmy, you can go in and check it out, but don't touch anything. And Jimmy goes in and accidentally hits something with his elbow, and so the next panel is like the top of Mount Tipton exploding. And then the next panel is Jimmy's on some other Earth, and the first thing he sees is Perry White, but he's a matador, and he's fighting a bull, but he's using a blue cape instead of a red. So that all happens on one page. So he protects Perry White because like his crash landing in the machine distracted him, and so he goes to try to help Perry White, and the he would be probably dead if but it turns out that he has superpowers on this dimension, like Superman. So when the bull goes to ram him, the its horn breaks off against his arm, and he's able to wrestle the bull to the ground. He's like, "Here, I have superpowers. Yahoo!" So he goes back with Perry White to his ranch, El Rancho White, it says on the mailbox. He does like some handy things around the farm there, helps out and stuff, and they go fishing together, and but then unfortunately Perry's heart gives out, and before he passes he gives Jimmy a letter to his nephew, and it turns out to be addressed to Clark Kent, who is the tours custodian of the World's Fair. So after Jimmy passes, or after Perry passes, Jimmy heads off to the World's Fair, and there's like some statues that shows that Benedict Arnold on this world was not a traitor, but instead he was the second president of the United States, and things like that. They always like to put in these alternate word stories. So he meets Clark Kent when Clark sees Perry using his superpowers, and he says, "Well, you're like Steel Man." He's like, "Who's Steel Man?" And he said, "Come to my office and I'll show you." He said, "In my spare time, I write about science fiction superheroes." And so he's got like all these pictures of his creations on the walls, like Solar Man, Mystic Man, Storm King, and Steel Man, and Superman. So he did c imagine Superman. But it's funny, he also has this Steel Man because it's basically like looks the same as Superman, except for the costume is gray where Superman is blue, but then the red is the same, and the emblem is similar. Not exactly the same, but it's very similar. But it's S for steel apparently. So So he's like, well, you basically had the powers of Steel Man. You should dress up as him and be like and be a superhero. So Jimmy uses his super speed to unravel his costume like down to the threads while he's still wearing it, and then sew it back into a costume that looks like Steel Man's, which is pretty impressive. But he's like, well, my red hair and freckles are gonna be a dead giveaway, so maybe I'll I still have my vest and shirt that I haven't made anything out of, so I'll make a cowl to cover my face like Batman, and that'll complete my costume. So now that he's got a superhero costume, he goes to meet Clark's coworkers, and it turns out Professor Potter is like his boss, and he acts like Perry White does on the Real World. And then he meets Lucy Lane in this world, who is pretty similar. But then all of a sudden, when they go out to the tour the World's Fair, the Luthar League, spelled with an A instead of an O, the Luthar League comes to attack, and they're the guys you see on the cover. They're these, they fly on these red circular platforms, and they have green, like military-like costumes on, and yellow, hard hats and red guns. So it's like Clark explains to him that the Luthar gang is this Luthar League is this group of hit-and-run bandits, and Luthar stands for League Using Terror, Havoc, and Robbery. So
That's pretty good.
yeah, it's pretty good. So so because Lucy's there, Jimmy doesn't want to reveal his secret identity, so he jumps into a trash disposal chute. He like makes it look like he tripped into there, and that's where he changes into his secret identity, and he goes on the attack and takes out the Luthar League. And then part two of the story, he's so they have the World's Fair, and the mayor of Metropolis declares the next day Steel Man Day for a thank you. And on Steel Man Day, like, there's a parade, and Jimmy as Steel Man, he rides in the back of a convertible and like the motorcade and stuff. But then we finally get to see the Luthar League's leader, and it looks to us, at least, to be the Joker. So there's a connection for you. He's got his purple pants, his green hair, and so like, what the hell's going on here? So like, towards the beginning of the story, just like Jimmy has a signal watch to call Superman at this time in the real world, he gives the signal watch to Clark Kent so he can use it to call him if he's in trouble. So he hears the signal watch, and he goes, and Clark's just sitting outside this volcano. He's like, what's wrong? Well, nothing's wrong. I'm working on this new story about a hero named Lava Man, and I wanted a chunk of lava to put on my desk for inspiration. So he's like, that you had me rush all the way over there just to get you a hunk of lava. And then he's thinking to himself, he's like, oh, I do remember Superman used to always yell at me when I would do the same thing, and now here I am having getting a taste of his own medicine, basically. So he does it for him. And we see that the Luthar League are causing some more havoc. What was it again? Havoc, robbery and mayhem or something. Havoc, yeah, terror, havoc, and robbery. They're doing some more of that. And so Jimmy has to take them out. But unfortunately, on this world, the way that kryptonite affects Superman, there's this stuff called, well, it's Tipton-ite. It's basically the pieces of Mount Tipton, the place that exploded at the beginning of the story. And he ends up surrounded by a bunch of it. It was like inside this rocket that the space rocket that the Luther Leagues shot at him, and he's like, how could they have known that that would work? Clark's just like, oh, maybe they're just smarter than you thought or something. Well, at this point, the real Professor Potter shows up because he's able to survive the explosion and then and figure out what happened to Jimmy, and he's able to follow him and track him down. He's like, but Jimmy's like, I don't want to go back. I'm a Superman in this world, and Lucy Lane's mad about me. I'm staying here. And he hears the signal watch again. So he's like, I gotta go. And it's like Professor Potter says, well, I'm gonna wait right here because I think you're gonna change your mind. So when he answers the signal watch, he goes and he sees the Joker. He's like, what the hell, the Joker? How did the Joker call me? And Joker says, Joker, I've never heard of anybody called the Joker. And he takes off his mask, and it's Clark Kent underneath the mask. He says, I'm not the Joker. I just wear this clown mask, because to hide my identity as the leader of the Luther League. So then he uses a device that apparently that lava that he had Jimmy get for him was actually like the last piece that he needed to make this machine to transfer Jimmy's powers to him. So he's like, I've thought of everything. With your superpowers, I'll make myself king of this world. And so, we see several panels where he just like starts going on a crime spree. Like cops are shooting at him. He's just standing there, like laughing it off. They're, it's like evil Superman, basically. But he's just going around as Clark Kent. He doesn't care. He doesn't have a secret identity. But Jimmy tricks him by, he's like, you might just be wearing a bulletproof vest. You need to prove that you really have your powers. He kind of appeals to his ego, and he's like, I dare you to crush this steel shell in your bare hands. He's like, well, I know you're up to something, but there can't be any kryptonite in that because I destroyed all of it, so I'm going to go ahead and do it. But when he crushes the steel shell, it has gas in it, and he's like, that gas destroys all your superpowers. He's like, that's not possible. There's no such gas. And he's like, oh yeah, there is. And he gives him an uppercut. There's another
That's an
tie-in for
uppercut. Yeah, there you go.
you.
That's a powerful punch.
Yes. So yeah, so they put him in jail, and it turns out Lucy came to the help by somehow she figured out by using a computer the formula for the gas, and but then Jimmy realizes he has to go back to his own world, but he does get a kiss from Lucy before he leaves, and so then they head back. And that was all 16 pages. So the other story I won't go into as much detail, but it's pretty good too. It's called it's a Sergeant Olson. It's Sergeant Olson, toughest man in the Marines. In this one, like Jimmy's working under his like spy job. So he goes undercover as a sergeant. And he's there because they think that there is a secret spy in the camp that's trying to get the plans for the super tank that they developed. So Jimmy's there, by as a secret agent for the Pentagon, and so he's like, now don't abuse your power. You know, you're going to be training the recruits. But then, like, for whatever reason, Jimmy like is like a total asshole to everybody. Like, when he first gets there, it seems like he's going to be super nice. Like, he gives candy bars to the troops and stuff, and then all of a sudden he just like becomes a total asshole. Like, he makes them like scrub the floor with their toothbrushes, and then like before it's time to wake up, he comes up with a pail full of water and like throws the water all over all over the troops and wakes them up that way. And then just like it was just brutal, and like the marches he puts them through and all that stuff. He's like, doesn't let him eat dinner. He just like tells him, he's like, because the cook made him a nice dinner because of how hard Jim had been working on him. He's like, they can't have that. Give him some of those dried out bologna sandwiches. And then he like makes him go back to work and makes him like climb through barbed wire and like all this crazy shit. And they're like, man, this guy is like the worst ever. And then Lucy Lane shows up again. She heard he's on a special assignment, and she had the day off, so she flew down to visit him. And when she does just the moment where like the troops are swimming for he says, you know, that was a rough march, like through water. He's like, I'm gonna make it up to you. You guys can go swim, wash the mud off. But the reason he does that is because he goes and grabs their rifles and throws them in the water. And Lucy sees him do it, and she's like, "What the? Why did you do that? You're like the meanest guy ever." And he's like, "I'm on a top secret mission, Lucy. Now beat it. I've got work to do." So she's like, "Fine, if that's the way you feel, I'm leaving. I'm gonna go talk with that nice lieutenant I met at the camp." So then Jimmy punishes the guys for losing their rifles, even though he was the one that did it. And Lucy's still at the camp when they get back, and she's like, Jimmy Olsen, you're a rat. I saw you swiping those rifles, and now they're getting punished. How low can you get? He's like, it's a part of my mission. Get out. Now get lost. It's like, I don't know what you're up to, but I've never seen someone so contemptible. So the story ends when Jimmy goes to the mess hall again, and he takes his dinner, and then he purposely trips and like knocks over this huge pile of dishes that all get crashed. And the chef is just like, "Oh, that's okay. Accidents happen. I'll clean it up for you, buddy." And so for whatever reason, Jimmy like rushes back and uses his like special communicator to call into the Pentagon, and it turns out that the chef was the spy. And when he knocked over all the dishes, he knew something was up, because if you break a dish in the army, basically you have to give the cook your name and rank and serial number, because then they charge you for the loss of the dishes. So he knew something was up, and when he did further investigation, they find this hollowed out piece of or a hollowed out loaf of bread that has the like plans for the tank hidden inside of them. And but it still leaves like the explanation, like, why the hell is Jimmy being such an asshole? And it turns out that he's like, you know, I need to tell you guys, like, the way that I've been punishing my troops, like, they really didn't do anything wrong, and I'm the one who threw away the rifles and everything, because apparently there's this mine, and they were set to work it, but it contained all this gold kryptonite. And Jimmy saw it on the first day in camps, and he's like, It's like, I want to warn Superman, but he's away on a mission. So, and he sees that his squad is supposed to dig foxholes in the area where the gold kryptonite is. And so all of the stuff that he did was to keep them away from that mission. So he basically like framed them so they get put in the brig so that they wouldn't be able to do that mission, because he didn't want the gold kryptonite to be discovered without it being able to be disposed of, because gold kryptonite can take away Superman's powers permanently. So that's why he was being an asshole. So this is actually, like, funnily enough, it was my favorite of the three, because I just found it really funny and entertaining. I just loved, like, the crazy things that happen, just like how fast the plot moves, and they don't worry, like, if there's like huge plot holes, or just like they just go with it.
They don't care.
Yeah, it's just like they just go with it. It cracks me up.
Yeah, those are good stories.
But I meant to look up, because, you know, obviously they don't credit
the writers.
Yeah.
Let me see what it says, because I had it up here.
Okay, yeah, you can.
It says it's got Bill Finger, Lou Dorfman, and Henry Boldnoff for the writers.
Okay. Yeah.
And right. Artists are Pete Costanza, Henry Boldnoff.
Cool.
And inker is Pete Costanza.
Yeah, I think the artists. So yeah, I think the artists were different on the two stories, but they, you know, kind of going with the house style, like they look pretty similar to each other.
Collector's edition, first appearance of Steel Man.
Nice. Yeah, I looked up, because I said it's in pretty good condition. I looked up, I think my comic shop was selling it for like $4 or $5, so not bad for 50 cents. Right, Maybell? You like that price? You like the bargain shop?
Yeah, likes the bargain shop so she could get more for her foods.
Yeah.
And treats.
Yeah, he's like, don't stop wasting your money on comics. buy more stuff for me. Give me more of those boxes that came to the house that had all that stuff in it for me. She still always thinks, like, when we come home from shopping, or just like, she always thinks like she's getting something. Sometimes she does. Because she's spoiled.
Yeah, Harley's a creature of habit. Like, once you condition her to do something,
via
food, she expects it.
Yeah. Yeah, they are creatures of habit. They love their routines. Like,
yeah.
I remember that with, like, Luna, too. It's just like, if you don't follow their routine, they, like, look at you like, what the hell are you doing? Don't you know what time it is?
So I have one more, but I'm going to be quick.
Oh, that's fine.
It's Captain Atom number 45 from September of 1990. This was the only issue of the series that I didn't have, and I have it. And now I have a complete run. This series is nice. Really, like, really good. Like, everything I read is, like, 4 out of 5, 5 out of 5.
Nice.
But Kerry Bates did a lot with it, and I think the writer of this might be his brother or some relative. It's Martin Bates. So he's the writer along with Martin Wiseman, and the artist is Martin McDowell. And this is the first appearance of Iron Fire, and it focuses on Martin Allard. He's a captain in the U.S. Air Force, signed to the Captain Atom Project. And he's being tortured for information by terrorists, and you don't know who the terrorists are at this point in time. But he eventually gets away. He remembers his, like, it gives flashbacks of his memories. He remembers Elaine Allard, his mother. He remembers his lover, Teresa Delgado, and his mentor, Wade Ealing. And he also remembers how Major Force was an asshole. I mean, he stuffed Kyle Rayner's girlfriend in the fridge, and then he also killed this guy's mom in front of him. He is a real jerk.
Yeah.
But
that's putting it mildly.
Major Force is a government guy that's used to just kill people, and he does it in like not ethically. Like if he gets told to target somebody, he'll target them, but he targets them in a villainous way. Like he gets enjoyment out of killing. Like it's not like a job to him. He gets excited about it. But this captain escapes, and but when you read about it, he was like, they let him escape on purpose, and then he goes back to his life as a captain in the Air Force, and he decides to get married to his love. He decides to, you know, all those things that he dreamed about when he was being tortured, he decides to resolve, and one of them is to kill Major Force, and they have an explosive device lodged in his head that will blow him up. I can't remember the comic book, but it was it Kyle that did this? I can't remember who did this. I can't remember the character that did this, but they found out that like Major Force couldn't be destructed or, you know, killed or anything. So in one comic, they basically decapitated him and then threw his head off into space. And I can't remember who it was that did that.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But that was pre-crisis. But he decides he's going to blow him up. But Ealing, you know, General Ealing sees him press, getting ready to press the button. He's like, I can't have you do that, son. You're like a son to me. But we need him to do our, you know, the jobs that people are afraid to do. And he has like this, he gets into the computer hacking business, and he hacks into the government computers and finds out more, and he begins to believe that Wade Ealing, the general, is his father, which he's not. But you find out who the terrorist was, and it's the Ghost. The Ghost is also a Charlton hero. He was a villain in the Charlton universe, and he's the one that's manipulating this captain to kill everybody. And he's actually created this was kind of ridiculous though. The Ghost has like his own fortress, and he wanted to recreate the Captain Atom explosion, and he does sort of recreate it, except he recreates it in a smaller venue, and that's how he gets Ironfire. He creates this He create makes that Captain Ironfire, which they set up Captain Atom, General Ealing, and Major Force to appear in this one place, and then Ironfire goes after them to kill them. And he's but except for Captain Atom, he says, "Leave, I have no beef with you. You need to leave now." But for some reason, Captain Atom and Major Force vanish, and he's left there to kill Ealing. And Ealing's like, I'm not your father. And then he realizes he's been manipulated by the Ghost the whole time. And it says, next issue, what happened to Captain Atom and Major Force? And it's like, God damn it, I want to read what happened because they just like vanished. But I am rereading Captain Atom leisurely. Like I read issues 1 through 4, and I'm rereading it. And I just like love this character. I'm
Nice.
starting to really dig it. Now I have the full run. So I have all of his adventures except for I'm missing quite a few strange adventures from the Charlton stuff. But I have them in hardcover when DC put out the Action Heroes line. So I have all of them to read, but I don't have all the monthly comics.
Yeah, I'd like to check that series out sometime because I mean, that's just like 80s DC is like my sweet spot. I love most stuff from the 80s DC. I think I've said it on the show before, like I think it's because the storytelling is sort of similar to the Marvel, like it's the same era of comics that I grew up with, but it's the other
Yeah.
company, you know, so
You should seek them out in 50 cent bins, the Captain Atom, and see if you like them, like one or two, and see if you do. Because
yeah, I grab some
I
at some point.
really dig it.
I did find the answer on Wikipedia. It says in Green Lantern 180, Force apparently decapitates Mora Rayner, mother of Kyle Rayner, and stuffs her severed head in the oven.
Yeah, I remember that.
He later says it was just a mannequin. Kyle snaps, decapitates Force, whose head was still talking,
Yeah,
seals it in a bubble of Green Lantern energy and sends it into outer space.
Yeah, so I knew that happened. I just couldn't remember the details. I was like, because I always thought, like, Major Forrest is like the ultimate asshole. Like, he's like awful.
Yeah.
He does like awful and brutal things. But the government wants to keep him around because he does his job. You know what I mean? He's like their toy.
Yeah.
So they protect him, which is even it's worse.
Crazy.
Yeah. But he's awful. But I just like of all the books that I read, like you said, the Jimmy Olsen was your favorite of the bunch. My favorite of the bunch was Captain Atom.
Nice.
And then the Avengers, and then the probably the Muhammad Ali, and then the Hulk one.
Nice. Yeah.
Art-wise, it was the Hulk one, the Batman and the Hulk, because Garcia Lopez on the Hulk was just amazing. But I just, like, I am loving Captain Atom. Like, I even loved it when it was the New 52, even though they made it more like Dr. Manhattan. I just dig the character. I dig the origin story. It's tragic. It's really like he was blackmailed, and then when he was blackmailed for betraying the country, they were gonna let him go as long as he voluntarily went into this experimental thing that created him. And like, he loved his wife and his kids, and General Ealing marries her. Like, he's a dick. He like marries Captain Adams, Nathaniel Adams' wife, and then raises his own kids. He's a jackass himself.
Yeah.
And then sounds he does like become, like, if you remember the JLA, Ealing becomes the Shaggy Man, I think, like a version of him. So it's like, he's not a good person.
Yeah, he was like in some firestorm too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's
the general.
He was in the new app. Captain Atom too, except he was a black general. They changed his ethnicity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like you're right. He had a brain tumor that was inoperable, so he had them go find the body of the Shaggy Man.
Yeah. So he's a jerk, man. He really is. But he's kind of like Captain Atom's fascinating because he's got that military thing going on with like Captain America, you know, where he's for the country, he'll work for the country, but all the country's not always legit, or at least his leaders aren't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So struggles with it.
Oh, happy anniversary!
Oh, thank you.
Tell Barb I said.
She's out getting a haircut.
Oh. So she looks nice for you on her
That's
anniversary?
Right. And then she'll give me a haircut.
Does she do yours?
Yeah, but That's she cool. just clips it.
Yeah.
I just put on the, what do you call it, guard, the quarter inch, and I shave my head. Mm-hmm. I'd like to do it before the con, though, because my hair's like borderline going to lose control, so if I don't do it. And then it's hot over there and humid.
Yeah, I'm probably going to. Normally I get my hair cut on the weekend, but I think I'm probably going to go like Tuesday or Wednesday after work.
Yeah.
Get my hair cut before the show and look nice for everybody.
I got to remember to print my script. Or I might take my new Surface over and just have it there. I don't know.
There you go.
I'm debating whether taking it. If I take it, because I have Comic Base on it now, which is the real reason I got it.
Oh, that's cool.
Because I can run my software on it, and then it could detach and be its own pad. So, like, I could just be going through like a list and say, "Oh, I don't have that."
Yeah, that'd be cool. You can just like set it on the long box next to the one you're looking through, and
yeah. Just go to town.
Yeah, that's what I like. You know, I just use
Comic Collector Live or whatever.
I used to use that. I switched to CLZ or Collectors with a Z.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I like about this is it has a an iPhone app, so I can and it has like cloud syncing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like having that on my phone. Like when I do like I did yesterday, you know, I can like look and see do I have this issue or not. And
mm-hmm.
It's real easy to use, and then I can a lot of times I don't even like pull up the web or I don't even pull up the program on the computer. I just add, like if I get you know just a handful of issues, I'll just use the phone to add them in, and then I can just sync it with the cloud.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. But yeah.
So what's on the agenda today? Barb wants us to pack from now, so we're ready.
Yeah.
I have to do some yard work. I have to go mow the grass, yeah. But I'm not going to do it till tonight because it's too hot.
Yesterday was a lot warmer here and humid, but today it's actually cooled down. It's only like upper 60s. It's going to be the high today.
I've only had to mow once so far.
Oh, wow.
After I mowed the first time, it just like grew out of control. Like it's already like going to take me forever because the grass is so high, and it's only been like 2 weeks.
Yeah, but I usually
getting a lot of rain and stuff. So
yeah, that'll do it. I usually have to cut it every week, and I've already cut it like at least 5 or 6 times, but. Last week we went through a really dry spell, and
yeah.
I cut it after work Thursday, and that was the first time in 2 weeks because it just was so dry.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm gonna probably do laundry today.
Yeah,
I have a lot of underwear, so I still have enough to take with me if I do.
But you reverse your underwear, don't you? Like this is day one, and then day two is the other side.
No, because then I'd have brown streaks on the outside. Why would I do that? And then I'd get on my pants. I'm supposed to protect my pants from the
dirts. That's right.
Yeah, but
it's supposed to be pretty rainy over there.
In Charlotte?
There's going to be a lot of people, like a lot of people. I mean, there's obviously going to be like our inner circle, but there's like a lot of people that are around that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was kind of wondering. It seemed like all the people I see that are going, I haven't been to Euros before, so I was wondering, is it just more people get to that than Baltimore or what? But
no, it's really the same. This just happens to be like a lot of people from the Taylor Network or, you know, that side that are going.
Yeah.
So it should be really interesting because usually there's a handful of us. And what I mean by that is like a table of 12 usually
right.
when we go eat. There's no way we're going to get a table for 30.
No.
So it's like I think what's going to happen is we'll probably break up into our own individual groups because there's so many of us, you know.
Yeah, we'll have to.
There's going
to
be too much. I know for sure I need to get a meal, whether it's lunch or dinner with Knutson. We need to do that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
That's a done deal, and that's going to be the hardest one. That's going to be the one that we have to schedule because he's only there for one day. So we have to do that.
But yeah, definitely.
I just hope they don't pick that vegan place, man. We eat dirt.
No, I don't. I'd be surprised if you could convince anybody.
Because there was like nothing on that menu. I lied. I enjoyed their fruit drinks.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they plan that, what I'm going to do is eat something and then just get a couple of those fruit drinks and then I'll the Popeye drink or whatever and I'll be happy.
Well, the thing that sounded like a negative to me when you guys were talking about it is just that the amount of time it takes to go there,
Yeah.
come back and stuff, it seems like it'd be better to go someplace that's closer, you know? But we'll
Someplace,
see.
go someplace. What do you mean?
It sounded like it like took like driving there and driving back like to take took longer. Maybe I misunderstood, but
Driving where? To the airport?
no, to that to that restaurant, I'm saying.
Oh, all the restaurants are walking distance, but they're far.
Yeah, and
They're,
I
they're, they're.
sounded it sounded like that particular restaurant with the
Oh, with that one, you have to drive. Yeah, we just happened to squeeze into a car. That was
Yeah.
far.
That's what I was
No, we
saying
took a
is that
cab there, and then we squeezed into Michelle and Keith's car on the way back.
Gotcha.
But that's what we usually do, is the cab thing. Even like if it's to a restaurant downtown, like down, it depends. Like if it's raining real bad, we'll take a cab. If we'll not,
Yeah.
we'll walk, or we'll use the hotel shuttle. I keep forgetting our hotel has a shuttle.
Oh, nice.
That's our hotel's really nice. You're staying at our hotel, right? Yeah, so that one has, you just go schedule the shuttle and it'll take us.
Oh, okay, cool.
What you might be surprised is how little time you actually spend at the con.
Well, I kind of saw that Baltimore,
It's kind of like,
which I felt like I was at the con enough, you know,
yeah,
like I
that's perfect amount, really.
yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be going if I wasn't if it wasn't like all you guys gonna be there, you know.
Yeah.
So that's my main, just like Baltimore, it's my main focus is just spend time with you guys. And
That's
I'm really
so much fun. It really is. I just, man, I just wish we were closer. Do you know what I mean? I wish it was like once a month we could say, let's go do this. Let's just go eat here or whatever. You know what I mean? That'd be awesome.
Yeah, definitely. It would be.
I
Maybe
don't have
someday.
any buddies here that are like that. I have coworkers.
Yeah, it's funny that the only people I do know now around here and like and hopefully I'll get to know them better, but Rob and you know, 'cause
Yeah.
Rob and Sam,
You should have made
that's
it to the what do you call it, the Niagara Falls Con, and you could
Yeah,
have.
I didn't make it to that. I might, there's like a couple smaller cons in this area later on this year that Rob is going to, and hopefully I'll meet up with him there or something like that. But it'd be cool to get to know those guys a bit better. But the funny thing is like I didn't, the way I met them was still the same.
Yeah.
was through the
Yeah.
internet. But they just happened to be close, which is cool. But yeah, I'm really excited to meet, you know, to see people I already know, but to meet Bill and Keith and people I haven't met yet.
Yeah.
This
I just hope
still
that
exciting.
Keith gets like everything he planned. Like he's there at least from Saturday afternoon to Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's hard to schedule anything with them depending on the scenario, but.
Yeah, well, at least I'll get to meet him for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's been an
Okie
episode of episode 71 of
yes, sir.
Retrocast, and this will probably be released after the con.
Yeah.
Because I still got a geek brunch to release, which I'll release today or tomorrow. But
Yeah, I told my wife that we would be recording today, and she's away right now, and then I'm going to the con, and I was like, she's like, oh, you guys are recording, and then you're gonna see him Thursday. I said, yeah, I'll actually will talk to Mike and spend more time with him next week than you. was like, that's kind of funny,
Yeah.
but yeah, sounds good. Mabel's. Speaking of her not being here, my wife usually takes her out while we
Yeah.
record, so she's starting to pace around. Want to go pee
Right.
pee? Want to go pee pee, Mabel? She knows that word.
Yeah.
She's like, what?
Her ears
Pee pee?
perk
Go pee pee?
up.
Yeah, she like turns her head.
You probably need to go pee-pee too.
Yeah. Let's go find a good spot to go pee-pee, Mabel.
Yeah, that's
right. We'll go together.
All right, so you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com, on Twitter at MythMakingETC, at Mike Myers Brunch. Emails are MythMakingETC@gmail.com, Mike@comicbooknoise.com, and leave an iTunes review. And Facebook page is Geek Brunch Podcast, and then click the like button. And I think that's it. And I would say if you see us at this at the Heroes Con, but we'll be there before I release this. So
yeah. So if you did, it was nice. It was nice seeing you.
Yeah, it was nice seeing you. If we met you. All right. Talk to you later. Have a good weekend. Bye.
You too. Bye. Bye.